Hello and welcome to the Monday, December 23rd, 2013 edition of the Science and its Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm doing a recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Just a little bit about the schedule for this week's Stormcast. I'm planning on recording only two Stormcasts this week, the one you're just listening to, and then one I'll likely record on Thursday for Friday. Given all the holidays and that a lot of people are taking the week off, there will be not a lot of listeners from past experience, so this is why I'll limit it to two Stormcasts for the week. And with that, let's take a quick look at diaries. And we have here one of those oldie but goodies, an attack that just doesn't go away, reflective DNS amplification. In this case, the attacker yet again registered a specific domain name for these attacks in order to deliver a large response. The attacker here registered a couple of domain names and then set up again multiple A records for this particular domain that are then being queried. The packets that we have received that are part of this particular attack also use a very large EDNS 0 UDP payload size of 9,000 bytes. Now, just a little background on DNS here. Typically or historically, the way it was supposed to work is that UDP responses for DNS are limited to 512 bytes. However, more recently, an extension was introduced to DNS, EDNS 0. This particular option allows the querier to advertise a larger UDP payload size. So whoever sends the query can tell the DNS server that's going to respond that it is willing to accept a large UDP response. And in legitimate queries, that's frequently 4,096 bytes. Here we have a query length or a response length of 9,000 bytes. What's going to happen here is these large responses are then being sent back by the DNS resolver as a single IP packet, which of course is likely not going to fit in the Ethernet frames and is then being fragmented. So not only do you have a larger amplification effect, but you also have now to deal with fragmentation, which makes it even harder to filter out these responses. As far as defenses go, there isn't really too much the victim of this denial of service attack likely is able to do other than trying to filter the traffic, probably signing up for some kind of anti-denial of service service. But the two real issues that I guess eventually will have to be addressed, first of all, spoofed traffic, so proper ingress egress filtering, and then also the existence of all of these recursive DNS servers that allow themselves to be used as amplifiers. But let's take a look at other news. Adobe is reporting that apparently someone is trying to spread malware using fake Adobe emails. The emails do pretend to include a license key for Adobe software. However, this attachment turns out to be malicious. And if someone opens it, then of course, they may get infected by whatever it is carrying. And then we have an interesting bug report from the OpenSL project that the OpenSL project will actually not fix. In this case, it's the dual elliptic curve random number generator that, of course, caused a lot of press recently as being backdoored. Turns out OpenSSL had code to support this particular random number generator. After all, it was one of the NIST blessed random number generators. However, due to this particular bug in the random number generator, you actually simply couldn't use this particular random number generator. Interesting that this hasn't been caught earlier, but I guess overall it worked out well for OpenSSL. And then we got one more diary that actually was just moved live, and Rob wrote it. It's a real good one, I think, because it deals with Java, which is, of course, something that is a problem for many of us. You do have to support Java, but there are a lot of exploits, a lot of problems keeping Java up to date. Rob's diary deals with how you actually can whitelist certain Java versions using Active Directory. And with that little Christmas present, thanks for listening, and I'll be back Thursday or Friday.